Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is Otto, America's most famous dog. What's he doing right now?
He just put his head down.
Otto, you good boy. Okay. Hi, everybody. It's the Fireside Chat, and it's number 232.
34.
234. Not bad, not bad. As I have often noted, if you watched any one of the other 233, I think you'd benefit a great deal. These are really important half hours. I feel funny saying it because I'm doing them, but I don't care. I rather people think, oh, the guy is arrogant than not watch it. I'm okay with what people say about me. What's more important is what I believe in and stand for. And by the way, that's a good attitude to have, because if you feel you're a vehicle for good things, you don't take stuff personally. It's a great subject on its own. But I've talked about that, right? Don't let insults go to your heart and don't let compliments go to your head. It's one of my mottos in life that I made up and has been very good for my life. I'm talking to you about a somewhat sensitive issue. But before I do, because I think I'll forget if I don't, I'd just like you all to know that I've started something else, not through PragerU, interestingly. Many of you know I have a national radio show. I've had a radio show for 40 years. And for the first time, I'm doing a podcast, aside, of course, from the Fireside Chat. And it is with somebody. I've never co-hosted anything. And she is a young woman. She's just 22 years old. It's Julie Hartman. I've had her on the radio show. Just look up Dennis and Julie and make sure to send it to young people in your life. If you want to communicate the values I have here, but they may not want to watch me, but they would watch somebody really young with me, it's worth it for anyone. It's called Dennis and Julie Podcast. And I just wanted to tell you about that. My subject today was spurred by an article. Rarely I read to you, but I need to read to you from something. It's on Substack. It's at, I believe the website is Common Sense. And it's about the damage done, they say, by COVID to young people in our society. Let me tell you immediately, drop the word COVID. The damage to people, especially young people around the world, was not from COVID. It was from lockdowns. It's a lie that COVID hurt young people. Lockdowns hurt young people. Being locked out of school hurt young people, not COVID. But people have accepted it, even people who write these articles. They say because of lockdown. One country in the world did not lock down, of which I am aware, Sweden. And not one kid under 16. They kept schools open till the age of 16. Not one kid died. No teacher died from contact with a kid. Every school should have been open in America. I have to control my anger, which is not common. I'm a pretty easygoing guy. But I am so angry at the lockdowns. This is the second year anniversary of my announcement through PragerU, that infamous tweet, lockdowns are the greatest mistake in human history. And I made sure to make it clear. I didn't say greatest evil. I said greatest mistake. It ended up doing a lot of evil, but I didn't call it an evil. I called it a mistake. And it was a state mistake everywhere. Every country bought into this. And they hurt young people. I hope not permanently. I hope not permanently. It is one thing to have your life stunted at 40. So between 40 and 42, you stayed home. It's awful, but you've already developed into an adult. But when you're 13... or 15 or 18 or 8, the damage, I pray it's reversible, but I don't know that it's fully reversible. Certainly the academic damage, missed 2 years of school, and hey, big deal. Let's just go back to what it was. The damage academically is astonishing. Even all the newspapers that were pro-lockdown are now writing articles about how much damage the lockdown, they call it COVID, the lockdowns did to the academic abilities of most young people in the United States. And throw in every other country. I'm just speaking because I'm an American and I know the American media. But they're all now writing, oh, it's really damaging, did terrible things to young people. But they were the ones who advocated doing terrible things to young people. It is inexcusable. In the United States, the CDC, the FDA, the NIH ruined young people. The medical profession was almost criminal in what it advocated. Now, this is so bad that if many of you watching this are young, so it's bad because then you will say to me, then Dennis, whom do I trust? You probably wouldn't say whom, you'd say who. Who do I trust? If I can't trust the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control, and the Federal Drug Administration, and the American Medical Association, then who am I supposed to trust? It's a very tough question. I will have guidelines on it. But I just want you to know that all of these and the politicians and media who followed like sheep hurt you. And they had no excuse to hurt you. Why did so many people like me or Governor DeSantis of Florida, I'm not alone, and so many dissenting doctors, I want you to look up the Great Barrington Resolution. It's Great Barrington, Vermont, and I think thousands.
Great Barrington Declaration.
Declaration, thank you. The Great Barrington Declaration. It was virtually completely ignored by the other complicit, guilty parties in ruining people's lives, especially young people. Twitter, Facebook, Google, and YouTube. They all conspired to keep every dissenting voice about the lockdowns out of your minds, out of your reach, out of your hearing, out of your reading. This is a lie, follow the science. They didn't follow the science. They followed the scientists they wanted to follow. They did not follow the science. The science said keep schools open. The science said kids, for that matter, adults, unless very immunocompromised, didn't need masks. We lived a giant lie for 2 years, and the repercussions will be felt for at least a decade, and in some cases for more than that. Let me read to you from this piece in Substack. Teenagers need a social life. Every single study and report and piece of data tells us so. But we don't need studies to tell us what we already know. Ask yourself, what would it have been like if you had spent your 13th year in solitude? That was a good question, huh? That's powerful. It was more than a year, actually. Millions of American kids had gone a year and a half mostly alone. And every single girl I spoke to, it's a woman who wrote the piece, said the same thing about the experience. They felt like they were sinking or being swallowed up. So it almost seemed like an understatement when, in December 2021, the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Vivek Murthy, said the effect of the lockdowns, she said lockdowns, has been, quote, devastating, unquote, devastating for young people's mental health. But of course, this Surgeon General, let's see, it was December 2021, yeah, so it was the Democratic administration, was complicit in the devastation. COVID, instead of nudging young people out the door, it anchored them to their parents, to their bedrooms, and to their screens. And now, by the way, again, it should be lockdown. And now that the madness is finally ebbing, they're unsure how to proceed. Galanti, I don't know who this Galanti is, but it doesn't matter, said, it's like a sci-fi show where people went to sleep and woke up 2 years later, and the world has moved on, but they haven't. The tangibleness of high school, sweaty locker rooms, polyester prom dresses, the cool metal of a first place trophy, the puff of a contraband cigarette was gone. It no longer mattered how high schoolers dressed, or whether they dressed, or even whether they showered. Being hermetically sealed off from bad dates, bad breakups, awkward conversations, tough teachers, and mean bosses has left young people even less capable of navigating the hiccups of daily life. See, that's a vaccine that you do need. Youth should vaccinate you against tough things. That's the vaccine. I was vaccinated that way. I was raised by strict parents, so they gave me a vaccine. Life seemed really easy when I left my parents' house. And I had a coach. The coach of the basketball team in my high school, when I was a sophomore, because I was so tall, 6'4" in high school. And so I made the team, basically because I wasn't in a wheelchair. I had no ability. I was just very tall. So he announced that at the final cuts, he goes, "You know, we really scraped the bottom of the barrel this year. Prager made the team." So that was a mean thing to say. So what? By the way, I remember my reaction like it was yesterday. I may have said this on a fireside chat. I wonder. Do you remember the story? Mm-hmm. Okay. Megan is like a recorder. It's like a human recorder. It's astonishing. But most people won't remember it, so I'll say it again. So I remember my reaction perfectly, and I'm very happy I had this reaction. I thought, this guy is an a-hole. Because it was a mean thing to say. Everybody to hear, they scraped the bottom of the barrel, I made the team. But, I had a big but, he's right. I knew he was right. So I was sort of inoculated against insults, because you're going to get insults in life. There's no such inoculation when you stay home. The CDC said that from 2019 to 2020, the incidence of girls ages 12 to 17 who were rushed to the emergency room after attempting suicide jumped by, are you ready, 51%. ER admissions for eating disorders doubled among the same group. This is girls ages 12 to 17, according to the CDC, which was complicit in ruining these girls' lives, by the way. It's really ironic. It's like the person who shoots you describes, you know, there was a gun involved that I can tell you about. And tripled for tick-related disorders, which experts trace in part to TikTok. By the way, they add in parentheses, where are you going? I can't believe it. I can believe it. Periodically, Otto does that. He might return. He might not return. During roughly the same period, the overall U.S. suicide rate, which skews heavily male, dropped by about 3%. But girls 12 to 17, up 51%. Okay, I could read to you article after article on the damage done academically, psychologically, emotionally, and in every other way to young people because of the gigantic error, and in some cases more than error, viciousness of the governors who shut down the states. And the worst of all were the teachers' unions and the teachers who support them. Teachers, some teachers are great. Most teachers are not friends of students. They are narcissistic and profoundly afraid human beings that they'll die from some kid in the class having COVID. There is zero evidence of that happening. So I go back to my question, how do you know who to trust? If you can't trust schools and teachers and principals and teachers' unions, if you can't trust the American Medical Association and all the other ones, this is a terrible problem. I know whom to trust because I know what common sense says to me. I'm not a doctor. You don't need to be a doctor to see data, to see that overwhelmingly, the people who died from COVID were immunocompromised, they had comorbidities, and they were over 80. Overwhelmingly. They say, well, Sweden had more deaths. Sweden, which never locked down. Sweden, at least during that year, maybe a drop later, but basically never locked down. And so they say, well, Denmark had fewer deaths than Sweden. Yes, but all of Sweden's deaths virtually were in nursing homes. They had a particular problem in nursing homes. They acknowledged that, but that was it. Every life is precious. But I want to tell you something, and I'm older than most of you watching. Every life is precious. A 90-year-old's life is just as precious. It's true, but it's not a tragedy when a 90-year-old dies. It's a tragedy when a 25-year-old dies. There's a big difference. All death is sad. Every life is precious. But some deaths are tragedies and some are inevitabilities. There is a difference. The meanness of the medical profession in the United States and Canada and elsewhere, which I railed against during those 2 years, you can't visit your dying parent. Do you want to? Here's a great story for you. I was in Florida a couple of weeks ago, and a friend of my son who lives in Florida told me the following about. Let's put it this way: his parent. I won't even say mother or father. In the Boston area, deeply afraid, deeply. The in New York, Boston, there's so much more fear than in Florida. It's fascinating. California, basically what we call in America, blue states. There's more fear. And he was telling me that his parent had a relative. So he has a relative, obviously. His parent had a relative in a hospice. People go to hospice to die being comforted, to have their exit from life as painless as possible, and of course with loved ones around them. This parent would not visit the relative in the hospice, lest the relative give the relative in the hospice COVID. I'm quiet so that it sinks in. I'll say it was his mother. The mother would not visit her relative who was dying in a hospice lest she give the person COVID. It's almost hard to believe. It's so stupid. But I believe it. And all the people who were banned from visiting parents, I know what I would do. I'm telling you, if my parent or a loved one were dying in a hospital, I would bang down the doors and go to prison. I know it for a fact. I know me pretty well. I would have smashed the doors down. I would have fought the police who came to arrest me, and I would gotten arrested. At least then my parent would know I wasn't going to stand for this. You're going to die alone because of COVID? Are you joking? The medical authorities in the United States have shamed themselves beyond repair. They didn't even involve themselves in therapeutics. Meaning, how do you prevent people or cure them early on? They for the first time, doctors were prohibited from prescribing what they wanted. They couldn't prescribe hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. Doctors who did, like Vladimir Zelenko in Brooklyn, New York, and others claim they saved hundreds of lives. Are they lying? There's a record. Every patient is a record of these doctors. This is serious stuff. If we don't blame the CDC and the medical profession and the Democratic governors of these states, if we and the press and the social media, if we don't blame them for the catastrophe of the lockdowns, then they will do it again. That's really important. But most people don't want to do it. It's too painful to think that people who are supposed to help me hurt me. It's too painful to acknowledge the damage Democratic governors and the medical authorities and the schools did. So people ignore it. They just move on. And if it happens again, there's a new variant. Okay, let's close down. Let's ruin more businesses. Let's have more girls commit suicide. But hey, lockdown is the only way. The first time in history that the healthy were locked down. It's bizarre. So if you can tell I'm angry about it, I'm really angry about it. And I hope you're angry about it. But I didn't answer your question. How do you know who to trust? This is a very tough one. One way, not the only way, is to find out whom you do trust. I've been broadcasting for 40 years. That's longer than almost anybody in the United States. So I have developed credibility among millions of people. I've earned that credibility because I never told them a lie. I never misled them in 40 years. So a lot of them trust me because I have no agenda other than telling them the truth. What is my agenda on COVID? I don't have an agenda. My agenda was to have people not get hurt who shouldn't be hurt, and to try to cure people in the early stages, at least, of COVID with therapeutics, or at least prevent them. I took ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine with zinc for well over a year, and then I got COVID, and in 3 days I was broadcasting. In fact, I probably, in retrospect, gave two speeches with COVID on the East Coast of the United States, and I live on the West Coast. By the way, nobody got COVID from my speech, to the best of my knowledge. I actually called them up. I say, I hope I didn't infect anybody. And when an article was written about me and COVID and my lack of fear about getting it, you should see in the Washington Post how many people wrote they hope I die from COVID. What was it Elon Musk just said? It was brilliant. It was a brilliant comment. And he's an eccentric guy. There's no question about it. But eccentrics are the only people who get good done. And because they're outliers, and outliers do all the good in the world. Sheep don't do good. Outliers do good. So he said that the wokeness is something to this effect. It enables the cruel to have a veneer of morality. Very, very astute observation. That's exactly what it is. There's a cruelty at the heart of wokeness. I don't know how kids go back and admire their teachers. I mean, I couldn't. I couldn't. You didn't want to teach for 2 years? Why? You're that scared? You're that so uncommitted to your profession of teaching? In Chicago and elsewhere, teachers went on strike, so protesting they were about going back to teaching. Oh, it's dangerous. It's dangerous. Well, they shouldn't have your respect. Truth is, you shouldn't go back to most schools. Just get homeschooled. Or go to a charter school that has teachers who aren't cowards. These are big deals, but people don't like to face it. It's too painful. It's easier to go along and get along than it is to resist. I understand that. But you'll be a happier person if you march to the beat of the drummer called truth than march to the beat of the drummer called social pressure. Okay. We'll go to our question.
Hi, my name is Stan Alger. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. And my question for you, Dennis, is, and this perhaps is a little more principle-based. And my question is, among the right, especially among the youth in the right, there's an increased interest in using big government to help bring our ideas and values into society through legislation. What's your take on this? And do you agree with it? Or do you think that perhaps we should stick toward a more traditional system of avoiding big government to carry out our beliefs? Thanks.
Okay, so here's an important lesson for everybody. I will answer it, of course, but here's an important lesson for all of you. And this is a good guideline because many of you will do some public speaking, but it's even good in private. Whenever you This is a rule that you should never break in all communication, whether it is written or spoken. If you make a generalization, give an example. A generalization without an example is like a tuna melt without tuna. Does that work?
Sure. It would have been funnier if then you didn't give an example.
That's a very astute point. It would have been funny if I didn't give an example. Yeah. That was good. That was good. Hire her.
Yeah.
So please always remember that. So here was a generalization, getting the government involved for conservative ideas, but you didn't give an example. You're obviously bright. You got a million things going for you. There's no way you would know this if I didn't tell you this. You can't. Most people cannot learn this on their own. That's why they were teachers. So I'm being a teacher here, and I know my profession of speaking. So always provide at least one example. Then it's devastating. That gives your generalization substance, credibility. And it enables the respondent to know what you're talking about, because I don't know exactly now what you mean by using the government for right-wing ideas. But I will answer you nevertheless. The smaller the government, the better the society. I don't want the government to foster my ideas. I mean, there are obvious basic things. I would like the government to wave the American flag on the White House. I mean, there are obvious things where I'm supportive. I like the fact that Thanksgiving is a national holiday. Of course, but these already exist. As a general rule, values should not come from the government. The government should be involved in keeping society free, in protecting my freedom and my physical well-being. And then say, bye-bye, I'm out of your life. Take care of yourself, take care of your family, take care of your neighbors. That was the American position. I take care of me, I take care of my family, I take care of my neighbors. And the left all over the world, because it's so appealing to people, people much rather have the government take care of them than they take care of themselves. The vast majority of humanity wants to be taken care of. And they'll trade in their freedom, they'll trade in their money just to have that done. People do not want to take care of themselves. It's a tragic part of human nature. So we had so many wonderful things. I mean, so many institutions to help people. The church was such an active thing in people's lives. If they needed companionship, if they needed help, if they needed sustenance, how many of the hospitals were founded by Jews, Catholics, and Protestants, right? Beth Israel Hospital, St. Joseph Hospital, the Presbyterian Hospital. That wasn't made by government. That was made by individuals who wanted to help their neighbor. Now people say government, government, government. The genius of the founders of America, the only ones who founded any country on the basis of smaller government. If they were resurrected today, they would ask to go back to the grave. The entire experiment has been subverted in favor of bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger government.
Is it hypocritical for conservatives to want the government to get involved with Twitter when it comes to free speech, like the issue.
Did you hear her question? Is it hypocritical to want the government to get involved, let's say, with Twitter with regard to free speech? As I said, the government has two roles, to protect my freedom and protect my well-being with an army, with police, with firefighters, etc. That's it. So it's not hypocritical at all. If free speech is being subverted in the United States of America on a massive basis, now, there are times when I fully get it. A Catholic school has the right to ask teachers to profess Catholicism. That's a given. So they're not going to hire an atheist, or at least an atheist who preaches atheism. That I get. But that's a very small thing, one school. And I honor that a Catholic school will want to teach Catholicism. But otherwise, Twitter, the suppression of this, especially in medical matters, the suppression of dissent under the lie of misinformation. You know who uses misinformation constantly? Vladimir Putin. Any report in Russia about Russian defeats or about what the Russian army is doing in Ukraine is called misinformation. Yes, the left in America and Putin have so much in common, it's scary. How's our timing?
We're at 30.
We're at 30. I spoke for a while. Mm-hmm. And the question. It's okay. It's good. It's all good. It came up today. I was interviewing, Neil Ferguson, the great historian, who left Harvard to go to the Hoover Institution at Stanford. And he was, we were talking about the sad state of world affairs right now. And I mentioned to him in passing that I'm somewhat pessimistic about the world situation and the American situation, but that I'm a happy person. So it sounds so contradictory that I'm a happy pessimist. I should talk about that once, by the way. But I just want to say for the record and leave you with this thought. I don't allow my intellectual pessimism to ruin my life. I don't want to give a victory to the negative forces of the world that they were able to crush my happiness. I have so many wonderful blessings in my life, and they're very sustaining. So is fighting for good. Fighting for good even enables a pessimist to be a happy human being. So I just want to say that because I would be intellectually dishonest to say, oh, things will turn out well. Things will turn out well if enough people who share my values fight. Then things will turn out well. On that, thanks for watching. See you next week. Thank you for watching this video. To help keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.